You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although temperatures keep edging upwards, I hear tomorrow's weather report is for it to be in the 80s. It is officially fall, which presents all sorts of opportunities and challenges in terms of produce that's currently available. And it brings one of our favorite guests to our show today, Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer whose column appears every Wednesday in the New York Times dining section. And her latest cookbook, I should mention, what is this, your
32nd.
Her 32nd. you can't believe it because she's still very young. Her 32nd cookbook is called Cook This Now. It's always so much fun when you come on the show, Melissa. And so pleased to welcome you back. And we also invite our listeners to join in the fun. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page if you have any questions for Melissa. So, do you have a favorite season in terms of produce?
Well, this is it. I mean, we are in the most bounteous time of the year. You know, people think, oh, summer. Summer is when all the amazing produce is. And it is. It starts in summer. But it peaks right now. Because right now, what we see at the farmer's market is the end of summer and the beginning of fall. And it's all together. We have tomatoes. We have eggplant and zucchini. And we have winter squash. You know, we have pumpkins and delicatas. We have Concord grapes. I mean, all of my favorite things are available now. So I just am cooking all the time. I can't stop.
And not just you. David Boulay told us recently that this is his favorite time because of the so many different ingredients to work with. And also, doesn't the cold weather make some vegetables a little sweeter?
Yeah, you know, we haven't had that. I mean, you really do need a frost for things like the cruciferous vegetables to really take on a sweetness. For example, although you'll see Brussels sprouts in the farmer's market right now, wait till it gets a little colder to eat those. Wait till it gets a little colder to really start with the mustard greens and the collard greens. I mean, winter's going to be here before you know it. Right now, enjoy the last of summer. Enjoy those eggplants and combine them with winter squash. Have you ever thought of doing that? You know, do something a little different that you wouldn't necessarily think of as a fall recipe or a summer recipe. It's straddling the seasons.
Although there are things that are already starting to disappear.
Yes. Sadly, we are losing. Gosh, what are we losing? Well, this is the end of peppers. We're losing peppers. I mean, we really are losing tomatoes. This is probably two more weeks. Corn is going. But corn right now, we've got corn and we've got shell beans. We've got cranberry beans and we've got I can't stop eating delicata squash. Those three things in a saute pan with a big lump of butter and a rosemary sprig is the most delicious side dish in the world, and you can only do it right now.
You have lost the squash blossoms.
Oh, well. Yes, we lost the squash blossoms.
Now,
that's true.
As far as tomatoes go, do you have any favorite kinds? Do you like plums, cherries, heirlooms, beefsteaks?
I love them all, as long as they're ripe. And, you know, do you know how to choose a good tomato? You probably know how to choose a good tomato, right? Especially this time of year, you absolutely need to pick them up. You can't just look at them and say, oh, that one looks good. Because they tend to be a little bit overripe right now. So really in the fall, or they're underripe. You know, it's hard to get the perfect tomato in the farmer's market. So what I suggest is buy an underripe tomato. You want it hard rather than too soft, because if it's too soft, it's going to be mealy, probably. Better to buy one that's a little bit on the firm side and then just put it on your counter and let it sit for a few days. It's not going to be, it probably won't be the most amazing tomato you ever had, but it will be delicious still.
But farmers try on the whole in the farmers' markets anyway, to pick the tomato at the right moment. So
right, but you know, this time of year,
leaving it for a couple of days.
Yeah, this time of year, they're kind of, you know, they're sort of taking what's left on the vine, and they want to get it out to the people before it completely, you know, we get too much rain or too much cold, and then they lose it.
And new things are showing up, like celery root.
Oh, celery root. Celery root is a good one for right now, actually. Do you like your celery root cooked or raw? How do you like to
both
eat
ways?
Yeah, I do too. But my favorite way is the French call it a celery remoulade. I just call it celery slaw. Mm-hmm. And if you mix it with cabbage in a regular coleslaw, just put some celery root in. Don't tell anybody you're putting celery root in, and it has this amazing, slightly more crunchy texture than the cabbage, and then this just lovely complexity. Have you ever put celery seed or celery in your coleslaw? Old recipes I've seen used to call for celery seed. But if you have celery root, use that instead. It's a much more subtle celery flavor.
Hurricane Irene last year created a lot of flooding, and so carrots and celery root were just about obliterated. But they're back again.
Yes, they are. And this is a really good time to use them. Carrots, as you say. Carrots, have you ever cooked the carrot tops?
Yeah, well, I put them in stock.
I just did the most delicious carrots, carrot top recipe that I'm so excited about. I'm going to actually put it on my blog in a couple of days, but I'm going to tell you all how I did it. Because I used to be the kind of person, I'd go to the market and I'd break off the carrot tops and I'd give them back to the vendor and say, here, use it for compost. I know, it was terrible. Now, this is amazing. You blanch them in salted water, squeeze them dry, and then you let them soak in ice water for overnight in the fridge, and you change it once or twice to get rid of the bitterness. Dress them with a few drops of sake, a few drops of soy sauce, and a little pinch of sugar. It tastes like a seaweed salad, but herbal. It's absolutely delicious. It's got a crunchy texture. Everyone go make carrot top salad. Buy organic carrots, though, because the tops really do absorb any pesticides. So you want to make sure to get organic carrot tops.
I wonder what that's going to do to my chicken stock if I don't use them.
Well, you know what? You'll have to ask the farmers for an extra bunch because they sit there. People leave them. You can get them for free.
Can you use the tops of celery root as well?
Yeah. The tops of celery root is celery.
This time of year, I also like mashed potatoes made with turnips.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. It just says fall to me, but the turnips just add some kind of a special flavor to the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, they do, and they lighten the texture, which I really like. I love a lot of butter in my mashed potatoes, but if you add turnips, you still have to use some butter, but you can use a little less, and you still get the fluffiness, and then you have that amazing sweet turnip flavor. But have you ever had turnips raw? Do you eat raw turnips?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, those are right now the juicy white baby turnips.
As long as they get cut really fine.
You can even cut them. The sweet ones, you can cut them in quarters, put a little butter on them, just like a radish. This is the time of year to do that in fall when they're juicy and plump before they start to dry out a little bit.
But much of what you've been talking about recently is about eating the fall produce raw.
Yes. Have you noticed?
Yes.
yes. I am right now, I'm in a moment of non-cooking. I mean, I'm still cooking, but I'm really enjoying things that I usually serve cooked. I'm enjoying them raw. Eggplant. I've been talking about the end of eggplant season. Eggplant, I've heard that they're toxic, but I have been eating them raw for the past month and I'm perfectly fine. No adverse effects.
You don't know that your eyebrows have fallen out?
Oh, they did? Oh, darn. I was wondering why my face looked different in the mirror.
Good. I would never imagine, because eggplant is always something to be baked or sautéed, eggplant, parmesan, things like that.
Exactly. But if you get the baby eggplant, especially the Japanese ones, I read about this in a new Japanese cookbook that just came out. I think it's called Japanese Farm Food. And you take the eggplant, you slice it thinly on a mandolin, and you salt it. And then you put it in ice water for a few minutes, and that's it. And then I just served it with a few drops of soy sauce, some chopped hot chili, and a little bit of coriander. It is refreshing. It's like a pickle. It's delicious.
One of the vegetables of this season that I've always been mystified about what to do with is okra.
Mm.
Other than a gumbo, which I've never attempted, what can you do with
okra? Have you ever done broiled okra in the broiler? I used to fry okra because I would think, oh, Southern food, fried okra. One of my favorite ways to eat okra is to, you know, coat it in buttermilk, cornmeal, and then fry it. But I've been lazy lately, so what I've been doing is taking my okra, cutting it lengthwise in half, tossing it in olive oil with some salt and running it under the broiler. It gets crunchy. It gets cooked. It is not the least bit slimy, and it is so meaty and chewy. Everyone, if you're an okra fan, try that method. You can also roast it at 500 if you don't want to use the broiler.
The word slimy is the word that does come to mind when I think of okra. Melissa Clark is the James Beard Award-winning food writer who writes the Wednesday A Good Appetite column in the dining section of the New York Times, also at newyorktimes.com. She's here to talk about what we might do during this fall season. She's also supplied us with a couple of recipes that you can find on our show page, a celery salad with hazelnuts and parmesan, and raw Brussels sprouts with manchego and toasted walnuts. We'll talk about that it's walnuts, right? Hazelnuts? It's walnuts?
I'm using a lot of nuts right now. Walnuts in the Brussels sprout salad and hazelnuts in the celery salad.
And we invite your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. And Alice from New York says, I have so many figs that I'm composting them. Can you provide some amazing recipes that Do not demand the entire day to prepare.
Oh, yes. Don't compost them. I'll come over. Where are you? I actually just wrote an article for the Times about fig trees in Brooklyn and all the five boroughs, actually, and my deep love of figs. I'll tell you the easiest recipe, fig crostini. It's so simple. Your favorite crusty bread. Toast it. If you want to slick it with a little olive oil, you can, but you don't have to. Then I'll put something creamy on the bottom just to hold the figs in place. Ricotta is amazing. Goat cheese is fantastic. And then sliced figs on top, a little bit of sea salt, and some fresh ground pepper. My favorite lunch in fig season, and it takes 5 minutes.
And I've always thought of figs as a tropical fruit, but they grow so well in Brooklyn.
Isn't that funny? You know, the reason they
grow... A fig grows in Brooklyn.
Exactly. Do you know, I learned something new. I learned the reason why. It's because of something called the heat island effect. It's all the concrete in the five boroughs actually helps fig trees survive the winter where they normally wouldn't because it radiates against them. And especially if you have a little backyard with a fence around it or a brick wall, your fig tree can do quite well.
I wonder why avocados don't do as well.
You know, I don't think there's as much of a cult around avocados, or historically there weren't. You know, the thing about Brooklyn fig trees is a lot of them were planted in the early 20th century with a wave of immigrants from places where the fig was highly esteemed, for example, southern Italy, Greece, and they brought their fig trees with them.
So during the summer, it was a big deal not to have to cook because you heat up the kitchen.
Right.
Now it's nice to start heating up the kitchen as things get cold. And you're talking about eating raw food.
Well, I like to experience a vegetable in every possible manifestation. You know, a Brussels sprout tastes completely different when you roast it. If you roast it, it gets crispy, it gets soft, it gets incredibly sweet. If you serve it raw, as the recipe on the website shows, you slice it really thinly. And instead of the sweetness, you get an herbal flavor, you get a grassy flavor, you get a crunch. So I love Brussels sprouts. It's almost like they're a different vegetable when you serve them raw than when you cook them. And I really think that you should experience it both ways.
Do they lose their gassy side?
Well, I'm just going to say that they – well, no, I guess not. I can't lie to you.
Joel in Nyack writes, the best celery root that I ever had was in Paris. I'm not surprised.
Yes.
The whole root was packed in kosher salt and baked, and then the salt crust was cracked at the table, and the incredible aroma of celery wafted out. It was served simply with butter, salt, and pepper.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you for sharing that because I have a celery root in my fridge right now, and I think I'm going to make that tonight because that sounds perfect. And I can see, I wonder what temperature they did it at. Probably a low heat for a long time, like maybe 350, 375.
That's a cooking technique, a baking technique that often gets used with things that are very fatty, like you can do duck with a thick salt crust.
Or lamb.
And all of the fat gets extruded into the salt, and then you get rid of it, and it leaves a little bit of a salty flavor on the outside. But I've never heard of it with something like celery root.
Well, you know, I was at a dinner the other night, and I had salt-baked beets. Similar concept. They weren't. It was served already, cracked out of the shell. But the beets had an intense sweetness, and I do think that salt helps concentrate the flavors.
A listener writes in that carrot tops contain alkaloids, and they are toxic.
Oh, they are. Oh,
yeah.
Well, I'm still here.
Well, you probably are building up resistance to all.
I actually
these
probably am. Any toxins in vegetables? I eat so much.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Melissa Clark. We also invite your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Melissa's latest book is called Cook This Now, and you can read her articles every Wednesday, the Good Appetite articles in the dining section of the New York Times. We're back with Melissa Clark. Two of her recipes for fall are on our show page, a celery salad with hazelnuts and parmesan and raw Brussels sprouts with manchego and toasted walnuts. And you'll find it by going to our website at WNYC.org. You know, I was thinking about some of the vegetables of the fall, although carrots are all year round, aren't they? But
they're really good right now.
I think of them totally as vegetables, and yet carrot cake is a favorite dessert.
First of all, carrot cake is one of my absolute favorite desserts. I like the color of it. I like the spiciness. And I really like the way that the carrot helps keep the cake so moist. I mean, anytime you use something like carrots in a cake, they just keep the crumb moist. Especially most carrot cake recipes call for a little bit of, melted fat like butter or oil, and that just makes a great cake. But what I've been doing recently, and we're talking about also straddling the seasons between summer and fall, is working on a recipe that I think of as kind of like a harvest cake. So it's carrots that are grated up, and then zucchini, or even better if you can get the yellow zucchini, which are incredibly sweet, and then grated beets, raw. Just grate them up raw and put them in the batter. It's a fantastic muffin recipe, and it's great for a carrot cake with a little bit of a twist and a more, I'd say, interesting flavor.
Although they are all adding fiber to a cake.
Yes.
And you don't think of cake as having fiber.
Yeah, it's also, since I've become a mom, I'm sneaky. I'm a little sneaky. I think about, how can I, what can I get my kid to eat? And, carrot cake just never gets turned away. A little cream cheese frosting.
So let's talk a bit about the recipes. You've given us these two. Raw Brussels sprout salad with manchego and toasted walnuts. Just saying that kind of makes me a little hungry. Brussels sprouts are, whether we eat them raw or roasted, are something that some people either love or hate. I never understand why they don't like Brussels sprouts.
I guess you're a Brussels sprout lover yourself. Yes, I'm with you.
I can't imagine a Thanksgiving dinner without roasted Brussels sprouts. You just put them in with some olive oil, a little salt, and they are just extraordinary.
What temperature do you do yours at?
I don't know, just a slow oven.
Oh, slow. You do low. Yeah. I do high. But either way, that's the thing with Brussels sprouts. They'll work either way. They're very forgiving.
Well, the nice thing is if you have other things in the oven, you can just stick these things in as well, and you're going to cook along with the turkey.
Exactly. An excellent strategy for whenever you're turning your oven on.
Now, why manchego?
I had a version of that recipe at a restaurant called Franny's in Brooklyn, and they used a young pecorino, and I just couldn't get a young pecorino. The pecorinos I could get were these old, tough, salty, delicious, but not the right flavor profile. The closest I could come was a manchego, which has a nuttiness. It has a flaky texture a little bit when you grate it, and it was just the right texture and flavor contrast to the Brussels sprouts, which are very, very fresh tasting, very juicy.
Franny's is most well known for their pizzas.
Yes, but they have
great
salads.
But they don't
make
a Brussels sprouts pizza, do they?
Not that I've known. They do a flowering broccoli pie, so Brussels sprouts could be next.
When you're working on a recipe, do you see everything as pieces of a puzzle?
I see everything as pieces of my refrigerator. What's in there?
You look in the refrigerator and say, oh, gee, this thing is going to go bad if I don't
something
with it now.
That's actually exactly what I do. I take out, when I'm making dinner, if I don't have a plan, and often I don't, I'll go into the fridge and I'll look at everything and I'll think, this needs to be used today. This needs to be used tomorrow. And I will kind of organize them in a way that I will use them in the right order. My husband always says half of our dinners are the oops, got to use it now dinners, which is true. But I like to think of them as using vegetables at their absolute peak.
Well, it works.
Yes.
And that's the important thing. You're starting off with something that's in the refrigerator that's demanding attention, and then figure out what to do around it.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know if you do this, but I go to the farmer's market and I'll just buy whatever looks good, and I won't think about how I'm going to use it. I don't plan when I'm at the market. I plan when I get home. So I have all this stuff, and I'll wing it as I go. And it's good because it makes me – I have to be creative. I have to, because I have to use, the quarter pound of ground turkey that I have left over with that one little lonely celery root. So a new dish is born.
Judith from Brooklyn wants to share her okra recipe. She does it Mediterranean style. Okra, lemon, turmeric, and pine nuts cooked in a skillet until it's a stew.
I love that idea of the pine nuts, especially because, when you cook okra, it has such a soft melting texture. So to have the pine nuts with a little bit of crunch sounds great. Thank you for sharing that.
We have a call now from Joel, who is in Union, New Jersey. Hi, Joel.
Hey, Leonard. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, listening to all those grated vegetables in cakes, I've given up cakes, but I make bread and bread machines, and I'm always looking for things to do with beets. What does your guest think of grating some of those vegetables into bread?
I think that's a fantastic idea. What I would do if I was doing a yeast bread, I would just use the vegetables and eliminate some of the liquid because they're gonna exude liquid. So, you could cook them too. Have you ever made a potato bread?
Yeah, sure, with potato water, too.
Exactly. So you could do that. I mean, I would try that. I would try it with beets. I would try it with turnips. You know, the same, you know, and see how that would work out for you. Or maybe half and half, half potato, half with another root vegetable.
But although I think it would be weird seeing a bread that it comes out kind of purpley.
Pink. Yeah, but that's true.
No, it doesn't matter.
I think it might be very beautiful, actually, magenta. Think of it as magenta.
Also juiced vegetables. I'm talking about liquid.
You know, we have not even talked about that. That's a really good point. Do you have a juicer?
I have
a juicer. And using a juicer right now on all these great vegetables that we're getting, it's another way to use them raw. And you can just substitute them in liquid for, you know, it's salad dressing is great. Of course, soups are great. And I think bread would be perfect.
And smoothies.
What about putting in what you normally discard from a juicer into the bread?
Yeah, the pulp?
The pulp, right.
That's a good point. Tons of fiber and probably a lot of good flavor. Again, maybe not the prettiest thing, but, if it tasted good, it doesn't matter, right?
And maybe you could come up with the equivalent of a carrot cake. Call it a pulp cake.
we need a better name. But although then again, if compost cookies are so popular.
And then if you put an icing made out of cream cheese and sugar, what's that? It doesn't matter anyway. Thank you so much for calling us.
Okay, thank you.
We're getting a lot of people writing in. One of them, Andrea from Rockland, suggests try grating raw turnips, adding a bit of chopped red onion, olive oil, and salt, and then just mix it in and enjoy it.
That sounds good. Actually, that's my kind of recipe. Really simple, but a lot of bold flavors. And you have two sweet things there, which would work nicely together, the turnip and the onion. Good idea. Thank you.
My guest is Melissa Clark, a James Beard Award-winning food writer who writes the Wednesday A Good Appetite column for the dining section in the New York Times, also thenewyorktimes.com. Is that where your blog appears?
I have another blog. It's melissaclark.net. Someone else has .com. I don't know who they are. But I have recipes on the blog. And I also do blog for the Times at the Diner's Journal on the New York Times.
And your latest cookbook is Cook This Now. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. That last simple recipe brought to mind something. Well, last night I was taken to eat at a very fancy, expensive restaurant, and the food was just so complicated, so full of ingredients that I just thought, you know, if they had just cooked this simply to the peak of its flavor, it would have been so much better. Do you think that the simple recipes are the best?
You know, I love to go out and get really fancy food with a lot of things going on because it will help me expand my own creativity. You know, I would never, I'm trying to think of a good example. What did I have the other day? I had the smoked tofu seaweed dish with frozen uni and then something sweet in it. And it was I'd never think to put those things together. And I will never make that dish because I'm sure it would take all day. But yet, smoked tofu, hey, what can I do with that? That's really simple. So I think and I agree with you that when I cook, I like simple flavors. But if you can just take one element of complexity and add it to something really simple, sometimes you can come up with just a genius dish.
So when you go to a restaurant and you have a dish that, I assume you order out of curiosity in some
always.
Cases.
I always order the thing that sounds the weirdest because I want to know how they can pull it off.
And then you analyze it in your head. Mm-hmm. You can't just eat it and say,
I wish I could. I miss being able to do that. No, I'm always thinking. I'm always working. I'm always trying to figure out how did they do it. But for me, it's like a game. I mean, we were talking about cooking being like putting together a puzzle or recipe development, like putting together a puzzle. And that's the same thing. I'm solving someone else's puzzle. How did they make this taste like this?
We have a call from California. Charles, where in California?
Well, I'm actually in San Francisco, and I'm an old friend of Melissa Clark's. My name is Charles Darden. I'm an old musician.
Why, hello, Charles. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm out here doing a musical job. I've actually been on the Leonard Lopez show, too. I'm a ragtime piano player. Maybe 15 years ago, I was on Leonard Lopez. However, listen, I want to know, can you help me make a foolproof macaroni and cheese?
Oh, I've got a good one for you.
Well, this is comfort food season.
Yes.
We're going into comfort food season, and mac and cheese is the ultimate comfort
food. Absolutely. And, Charles, you've asked the perfect question, because I have a recipe for mac and cheese with grated carrot in it. And so, we're talking about grated carrot, grated vegetable. The reason this recipe is so good is because, first of all, the carrot looks like the cheddar cheese, is orange, so my kid doesn't know it's in there. Not that I lie or anything. And it adds this incredible sweetness and extra fiber, and it really just, I think it adds it's easy to do, but adds a layer of complexity to mac and cheese. Not that there's anything wrong with regular mac and cheese, but if you want something that is a one-pot meal, it's got its vegetables in there, you've got the protein from the cheese. I actually use whole wheat pasta, but you can use regular pasta. And then I do it very simple. I don't make a bechamel. I like to just do egg and sour cream and grated cheese. I mix it in together in a mixing bowl with the grated carrot. Toss it with
sour cream.
Yeah, sour cream. Oh, that's a good trick. I learned that in the South. That's a good. In fact, I think I learned that from Paula Deen. That is a very good trick, sour cream, because it adds tanginess.
But she probably told you to put 2 pounds of butter in it.
She might have, but I simplify things a little bit to my taste.
Okay, Charles, does that help?
Thank you so much, and I'll try that between my next gig.
Oh, Charles, okay. Thanks for calling.
A lot of people, as I said, have been writing in. Liana on Facebook asks, can I eat beets raw?
Oh, yes, you can. Beets raw, they're one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite ways to eat them raw, mostly because beets take a really long time to cook, and I tend to be in a hurry. So I'll make a raw beet salad all the time. Remember what the other woman said about turnips and onion? I do that with beets.
What about microwaving them? For example, if you want to roast beets, could you microwave them just to get them a little tender and then put them in the oven?
You probably can, but I'm really bad with it. I don't use my microwave till its full potential. I need to really explore the microwave.
Because I've done that with potatoes sometimes when at the last minute I realize that I want to have a baked potato or do something else with potatoes. I will microwave it for a while, not that long, but it gets it going, and then put it in the oven
to crisp it up. That's actually a really good idea. I might have to steal that. If you see it in the column, you know where it came from.
Elaine from Brooklyn has her French grandmother's recipe, combine Brussels sprouts with chestnuts, and then use it as a stuffing for a turkey. Mm,
oh, that sounds so good. And the thing about Brussels sprouts and chestnuts are that they're about the same size and the same shape, but they're texturally completely different. That's a really nice idea.
And Erne on the Upper West Side shares this recipe. Sauté whole okras in olive oil and onions for 10 minutes. And then add a few whole cherry tomatoes. Cook them until they're soft. He says it's unbelievably good and not slimy at all.
I've heard that cooking okra whole really helps reduce the slimy factor. I actually kind of like the slime, so it doesn't bother me. I do. It's a mouth coating and rich. But I've heard the cooking it whole thing. So I'm going to have to try that.
The problem with something like okra is my mother cooked it for us when we were kids, and it was a traumatic experience.
Oh, no.
Certain foods where we remember this terrible thing that happened to us when we were 7 or 8 years old, and we never really can get past it.
Yes. And
that's what happened with me with okra.
I'm sorry to hear that, because it really is a good vegetable.
Well, luckily, cassoulet was something I came upon later in life, and I gather that this is a good time to start thinking about cassoulet. You had a tremendous bean soup last year in the Times with sausage that didn't need a lot of soaking. And it's been a staple of one of my producers cooking ever since.
You know, the soaking of the beans thing, this has been a big debate. When I wrote this article, I wrote in an article in the Times that I plan to the last minute that I don't usually have time to soak my beans, because I wake up in the morning and think about what I'm going to cook that day. I don't do it the day before, when normally you'd soak your beans overnight, right? And so I have just been cooking my beans, and they've been fine.
And can you do that with cassoulet as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I have. I mean, I know some people would say, well, there's several reasons to soak your beans. One reason is supposedly it breaks down some of the proteins that cause gas or enzymes that cause gas, so that if you soak them and then you discard the water, they're less gassy. I actually haven't noticed that big a difference.
Well, you do see these little bubbles coming out of the beans.
Exactly.
And so we assume that's the stuff that's going to cause the gas.
It's causing it in the water. Maybe that's true. But anyway, I don't soak my beans. If I have time, I soak them. And here's something else. You can just soak, even if you soak them for an hour or two, you know, you don't need to soak them overnight. Soak them for as long as you have.
Ruth from Brooklyn says she chops up cauliflower into her mac and cheese.
Oh, I love
that. Instead
of
using cream, she puts in cream cheese. But several listeners, Melissa, have asked you to post your mac and cheese recipe, the one we've just been talking about. Can you do that on our website?
I can. It's on. I actually have it on my website. I will send it to you. You can put it on your website. It's in my cookbook, Cook This Now. It is. It's really one of my favorite recipes, so I'm happy to spread the love around.
We will be having you return on the show closer to Thanksgiving
to
talk about shortcuts for having a rich and satisfying Thanksgiving meal. But until then, what will you be cooking?
Oh, more vegetables, and more vegetables. Duck. I'm about to take on duck as a little project, so I'll tell you all about that for Thanksgiving.
And we will be seeing that in the New York Times?
If it works out. If not, then no, I'll sweep it under the rug.
Melissa Clark is the James Beard Award-winning food writer whose column every Wednesday in the dining section of the New York Times is called A Good Appetite. She also has her own blog, and she blogs for the NewYorkTimes.com. Her latest book is Cook This Now. We'll see you somewhere around Thanksgiving.
Looking forward to it.